Hey, everybody, it's Sunny. I didn't post an episode on this free feed last week because I had a massive technical meltdown. I couldn't do it. I literally physically couldn't do it. So, but we did record a new episode of the show. We were able to get that up. As a result, you're just going to never, if you don't sign up for the Patreon, you're never going to hear the Strays episode. Great episode. We had a great time taping that episode. Very good. But you're just never going to hear it if you don't go sign up at the Patreon, because we, you know, that's how we keep this thing running. We keep all the, you know, fees for the various servers and whatnot, and, you know, our precious time. So anyway, go sign up at the Patreon. This episode is about Gran Turismo. I don't even know if it's still in theaters. You should listen to this. And once again, you could have heard this several weeks ago if you had signed up at subbeacon.com. You'll easily find it. Go listen to the show there.
Think you're going to play a stupid video game about cars and you're going to become a race car driver?
All I ever wanted to do is be a racer. I'm doing it.
The 10 of you are the best Gran Turismo players in the world. Now is your chance to race real cars.
This is insane.
It's not going to work.
The guys who race are elite athletes. Your kids are scrawny little gamer kids.
That's where you come in.
Welcome to the Sub Beacon Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike Warren. And joining me, as always, are my two co-hosts who know that champagne is for the podium. Jonathan V. Last and Sunny Bunch. Join us over at subbeacon.com. You can become a patron there. Get our episodes the moment that they post on Friday mornings. Get access to those bonus episodes that we occasionally post. You can comment. Be a part of the greater Subbeacon community. We have a lot of fun over there, and sometimes we even jump into the comments. That's subbeacon.com. Join us over there. We're going to be talking about Gran Turismo later in the show. But first, let's see what's going on in everybody's world. JVL, what's happening, brother?
So I have something that's been bugging me for a while, and I'm just going to bring it to you two, and we can talk about it.
Work it out.
My AMC is a standalone building on the ring road surrounding a shopping mall. So I'm trying to give you guys like a sense of the, you know, unlike the in Woodbridge, the AMC at the Potomac Mills Mall, which is built into the mall, right?
Sure.
This is its own thing. You know, it's a standalone building, and it has on the building five, I don't know what to call these, Sunny. I'm sure there is an industry term for them. Very, very large vinyl one sheets, but a one sheet poster that is made of vinyl for the exterior of a building. And that is approximately like 25 by 50. So you get what I'm saying? Like very, very large, almost like a billboard, but they're like one sheets.
Okay.
And I have been trying for the last year to understand the rhyme and or reason for which movies are displayed. One of them is almost always a low budget horror movie. Fine. One of them for a long while was the Avatar movie. Fine. I saw them put up an ad for put up one of these things. I actually saw them swapping out one and putting another one up. They use a big cherry picker to do it. And they put it up for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, 2 weeks after Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 came out. But one of these, again, there's only five spaces for them on the building.
Right.
And since I moved here a year ago, one of them has been for Chadwick Boseman's 21 Bridges.
Sure.
Which I believe came out like 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago.
Did it come out before the pandemic. Yeah. So that was a 2019, I think. Yeah.
So this is a gigantic ad taking up 20% of the available ad space on the building for a movie that's been gone for so long that the star of it is no longer with us.
R.I.P.
And the way in which these things sort of come and go with, again, absolutely no regard to the schedule of movies as they come out. It mystifies me and bothers me. And part of me is going to like buttonhole the general manager of this theater at some point and just say, hey, Joey, can you explain to me what's going on? And I'm sure the answer is going to be that he's being given some sort of consideration.
Well, I would assume, can I ask you to explain once again exactly what the, so they're big giant one sheet posters that are kind of like banners almost that hang from the side of the building. Is that?
Yeah, they have like grommets, very large grommets on them, you know, built because they're made of vinyl. And those grommets have like permanent anchors on the building. Sure. And so, you know, again, it's like a billboard. But a billboard that, you know, goes vertically in portrait mode, because again, it's basically the one sheet poster.
Mm-hmm.
They're modified
one
sheets.
They're not the pure,
the exterior of the building, and again, are the size of the building. I mean, they're enormous.
To draw people in who want to see the latest low budget horror movie. Oh, this AMC has it.
This AMC, if you wanted to see the horror movie that had like a rosary as the one sheet, now we've got that. If you wanted to see. They still got one for Quantumania on the side of the building?
Yeah. I would assume it just has to do with the ad. I would assume that somebody paid AMC somewhere. So Disney or whoever paid AMC some amount of money to have these things posted on the side of the building. That is almost certainly what is going on.
I assume
on there.
So, correct.
The 21 Bridges thing is interesting. Part of me wonders if they're just leaving it up as a tribute to Chadwick Boseman, who has unexpectedly passed, if they think that like there will be a backlash if they take down the the long.
Yeah, what's the statute of limitations?
How long do you have to keep that up there after his untimely? We just marked the third anniversary of his passing, I think it was like this week. Which is, that is one of the most shocking actor deaths I can remember. And not because it would have been one thing if he had died in like a car wreck or something. It'd be like, oh, okay. Yeah. But like the fact that he died of cancer, like basically in the midst of making all of these other movies, it was shocking.
21 Bridges was released in 2019.
Yeah, so that's 4 years ago that came out. The only reason I could believe I guess the other thing is maybe the studio that paid for that space, I would assume it's, God, what was that released by? I don't know who released that. I know it was made by Abgo.
I'll look.
But maybe the studio that paid for that space, that like quadrant of the front of the building, has not produced another one of those giant vinyl posters in the meantime. Like, I would assume they...
And that's their space,
I would assume
space,
they
right?
swap out
one
studio.
Of them is Paramount, one is Disney.
See, but if it was Paramount, I would assume that, like, you would put, like...
You're saying like, each of these is to one of the, like, Sony has one, right.
So I would assume that might be it. Maybe, like, the studio just has not produced another one, so, like, the space that goes to whoever owns... that space. Again, I can't even remember who released that film, but
I'm looking on IMDb to try to figure this out.
I know it was produced by the Russo brothers.
Would it be crazy for me to, the next time I'm in the theater without a time crunch, ask to see the manager?
No.
For the sole purpose of saying, hey, I'm just... Yeah, really? That doesn't mark me as a weirdo?
It would mark you as a weirdo, yes, but it's still interesting enough to find out. It's fine to risk it.
You're a journalist, JVL. You ask questions and
don't tell them you're a journalist
answers.
Though, because then they'll
don't tell them that.
They'll have to be like, oh, you got to call AMC corporate, and we'll figure out somebody you can talk to. But no, I would assume just from the description, from what you are describing, I would assume that space is owned, you know, in air quotes here, by a studio that has yet to produce another giant vinyl poster to replace the one.
Which would make sense because what happened after 2019 pandemic? Right. They're not. Yeah, it's. Yeah. This puts me in mind of actually an article that one of my colleagues at the Dispatch sent around this morning, which is some guy. I don't know who he is. I don't know if he's how he has all this time on his hands. I don't think he's a journalist, but he has a sort of journalistic impulse, clearly. And it's about a pedestrian bridge.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I just wrote about that.
Did you just write about that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. It's about the interstate bridge. And well, for our listeners,
this guy went insane.
It went insane about, but it is, the question is there's a pedestrian bridge over the interstate in Minneapolis that he doesn't understand why it's there or why it was put there. And he goes down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out what purpose was this put up.
He writes like 7,000 words on his detective. It's amazing. It's
insane. And I love it. And it's terrific. And you know, that's all I'm saying is if whatever you do to find this out, it won't be as crazy as that guy.
It won't be as crazy. So the US distribution on it was STX. Did they go out of business?
That would 100% explain it, because STX basically, STX got, I think, absorbed by somebody, but they were in receivership for a while. STX has, I think, not really released any movies in the last three. STX, this is what happened with Operation Fortune Ruse de Guerre, the Guy Ritchie movie. That was an STX film that it wound up in limbo because there was a distribution issue, because STX basically ceased to exist. Not exactly, but like,
yeah.
And then eventually it got picked up by somebody. It got a token distribution, and then it got put on VOD. But that actually 100% explains it. That is a space that STX has purchased, and they've got nothing else to replace it there. So now AMC is probably half-heartedly, I'm sure, trying to find somebody else to take that spot.
To buy that spot, right.
We should buy it for the Sub-Beacon. JBL's flagship theater. Home of the Sub-Beacon. We should ask how much it would cost. That's what you should ask the general manager. So GM, how much would it cost to buy this? We could get a celebrity endorser.
Cover expenses. I wonder if we could cover our expenses.
We could, brilliant.
We could hire, I don't even know who we would hire.
Some kind of agent or something. So I love how you took this mystery, Sonny, and found a way to.
Look at that. We solved it right here. I don't even need to speak to another human being. Then. Yeah. Perfect. Ah.
The best kind of journalism.
All right.
Well, Sonny, what's going on with you?
Can I complain about Amazon for a little bit? Because I like Amazon a lot. I use Amazon for everything. And the search function on Amazon has gotten very, very bad. To the extent that when I am looking for a specific thing, I will frequently Google the thing I am looking for with, like, I'll look for, like, Equalizer 4K, Amazon on Google, yep. and then click the shopping link that comes up. And I bring this up because I was just, you guys may have noticed, I was just opening up some field notes. I like these little notebooks so I can jot down notes during the show to mark where we have a pause or a delay or whatever. I go through them pretty quickly. I go through like one every 3 or 4 weeks. The reason this comes up is because I buy Field Notes, specifically the brand Field Notes, for a very explicit reason. They're made in America. I like to support American jobs and manufacturing, whatever. And I do this because my wife works for the Alliance for American Manufacturing. It's a family thing. So one day she sees me writing in one of my little notebooks and comes up to me and starts, she's like, stop buying those. It's like, stop buying these. These are made in America. I'm only buying them because
buying from America.
I only buy these because you
why do you hate America? You call me Beth.
Why do I have to stop buying these now? She's like, no, those aren't field notes. That's a field book. And I looked at the cover and yes, it was called a field book. And what has happened is a Chinese manufacturer has created an identical product called Field Books instead of Field Notes.
It's the Lepin of
notebooks. So when I searched Field Notes on Amazon, Field Books was the first thing that came up. I didn't realize it was a sponsored result. So for like months, I was buying these things, not realizing, you know, what I had done. And it's just it's very indicative of the overall decline of the search function on Amazon, which again has just like cratered in usability. I think there are just, you know, rafts, oceans of knockoff merchandise, like crap.
Question.
Yeah.
Up until the lovely Beth said this to you, were you happy with your...
They're identical. They're exactly
and
the same.
Are the field notes more expensive than the field
course,
book?
Of course.
So really what Lord Bezos was doing was trying to look out for
trying
your family.
Trying to save me money. And I appreciate
and protect you.
While I appreciate that, that's not what I was not trying to save money. I was purchasing something very explicitly that was slightly more expensive for ideological reasons.
There's more than just monetary value.
Yes.
When you're talking about value.
So I like, again, it's just like, it's a little thing. It's a, anyway, long story short, the lovely Beth bought me a, like a box of field notes that is like, there's like 50 notebooks in there. So I'm not going to run out for a long time. I'm not going to be tricked into buying any more field books.
You know,
field books.
I wonder if you also saw this piece, Michael. I think it was Charlie Wartzel wrote about how Wirecutter has basically become unusable.
And this is another,
and I have been noticing that Wirecutter is not as good as it used to be.
But you know what? I think Google is not as good as it used to be. And my wife and I were talking about how Google is, unless you know exactly what you're looking for, it is essentially useless. In terms of actually searching through different web, like
as a discovery mechanism,
as a discovery, right. In terms of surfacing new things that you haven't seen before, that are not ads, that are not somehow being, you know, SEO'd out the wazoo. Like it's just,
I think
just
Google
sucks.
Has lost the fight against the SEO optimizer, like spam content farms.
But they're also totally focused on advertising. Right. Like one of the reasons Google is not as useful now is because they prioritize advertising. You got to go through you have to be paying very specific attention to what is an ad and what is not. One example on this. I Googled my kid's dentist the other day. I needed to call him about a billing question. I knew the name, where it's located. So I Google it and I just hit I called the first number that came up on Google. Right. Just called it. And I start talking to people and you know, they say children's dentistry, blah, blah. I'm like, hey, I have a question about my kid's billing. You know, what's going on here? And they're like, OK, what's the name? I gave them the name. What's the birthday? I gave them the birthday. They're like, your child isn't a patient here. And
oh,
I'm like,
had they bought the search results
and I'm like,
to advertise their practice?
Yeah, I'm like, what are you talking about? I have a bill from you right here. And she's like, what's the name on the bill? I said the name of my kid's dentist. They're like, oh, no, we're. These aren't the actual names, but instead of Children's Dentistry of North Dallas, we're North Dallas Children's Dentistry. And I went back. I was like, oh, OK, sorry to bother you. I didn't mean to bother you. I hung up and I went back and I looked at the webpage again. And sure enough, the first result was an ad that I had clicked on because I wasn't paying explicit attention to the order of the words that create the dental, and I was just like,
people's front of Judea or Judean people.
It's just very, very frustrating. Everything is getting worse.
Everything is getting worse.
If Google offered you the ability to pay some monthly fee, and let's pretend that you get to name what the monthly fee is. Maybe it's 99 cents. Maybe it's $19.99. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But for them to take out all the contextual ads and just give you their best search results only, would you pay it? And if so, what is the dollar level that you would say, yeah, that's worth it to me?
Boy, I don't know. I don't know that I would.
You could call it Google Plus. Oh, wait.
Already tried that once. I don't, you know, that's a good question. I don't know that I would because I just have stopped using.
You're asking to use their search function for free.
I have stopped using Google for lots of things. Now, I pay Google for other stuff. Like, I pay for more Gmail space. I finally broke down and, like.
So did I. I just did that, like, last week.
I finally had to get the 100-gigabyte plan or whatever because I was tired of every 3 months having to, like.
And I pay for YouTube because I fucking hate YouTube ads.
Do you pay for
YouTube TV
or just YouTube Premium?
No, the YouTube Premium. Red is what they used to call it.
Yeah.
And I never watch an ad on YouTube.
Yeah. If you get YouTube TV, does that include YouTube Premium?
No.
I don't know. YouTube TV is very expensive.
YouTube TV is basically
Sling.
Cable.
Yes.
Correct.
Basically, yes. I'm very strongly considering getting rid of my cable and getting YouTube TV, in part because they've got, you know, the Sunday ticket. But also because I feel like in the next year or so, CNN is going to come to Max. And at yes. at that point, I am simply not going to need cable anymore. I just won't need it. I'll get an antenna for, you know, the 3 football games a week.
Right. You might be able to save $1.50 a month.
Well, that's
getting rid of cable.
If I got rid of cable and YouTube TV, if it was just like the various streamers that I already pay for, I mean, that's like, that's like $80 a month right there. Cause I'm paying for everything right now. When I do my taxes, 3 weeks before they're due in April every year, I sit down and because these are legitimate business expenses, I total up how much money I'm spending on cable and streaming and everything else. And it's an astronomical sum. It is a ridiculous amount of money.
As you said on an episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood recently, the future is just like the old cable, but with less content, less choice, and more expensive.
Yeah. And that's ads you can't skip.
And the ads are all coming. Right. The ads are, at least when you had DVR at the late stages of cable, you could skip through the ads. But we are rapidly approaching a point where the mature streaming businesses are all going to realize that they've got to herd the cattle into ad tiers no matter what. And they will make non-ad tiers so prohibitively expensive that you'd have to be Jeff Bezos to afford them.
Yep.
By the way, have you noticed, and I've noticed this chiefly on Hulu, which is what we have with ads. We don't pay for the ad free. That it is the ads are louder than the programming.
I pay for
just like in the cable days.
Exactly.
I pay for no ads. I watch so much. Hulu is the one channel that I pay for no ads, and it's worth it because I watch a lot of stuff on Hulu. The FX hub on Hulu is
all probably, the FX stuff. The Bear. Yeah. Only Murders in the Building
is great. The absolute golden age of TV was basically like 2006 to 2010 or so, where the pressure from TiVo forced all the cable companies to offer DVR packages. Then you could record everything, fast forward through the commercials, watch it either later that night or the next day. Don't have to sit through any commercials. But now we're going to be in a situation where you end up paying probably more for less stuff. You're going to get commercials you can't skip. Again, everything is getting worse. Everything is getting worse. Things were better when I was younger.
Do you remember? Do you remember when TVs started offering a feature set that would normalize the volume of commercials?
Yes.
And we were like, "Oh, this is like 1998, maybe."
Old Sony Trinitrons and things like that.
You can now those broadcast networks think they're putting one over on us by making the commercials louder, but our Sony Trinitron will now make them the same volume. That's where we're headed back to. It's great.
Worst.
It's all great.
Yeah.
Michael, how are you, buddy?
Me? Oh, just grand. Just paid an HVAC guy to come fix my issue that I was talking about.
We mentioned this last week.
And how did it end? Was he able to find where the condenser line came out? Or
yes.
Where was it?
So interestingly, a commenter at subbeacon.com, sign up at subbeacon.com, actually hit the nail on the head. Or maybe it was on Twitter. I think somebody may have replied to me on Twitter about this, who suggested that maybe the condensate line was draining into the main sewer stack in my house.
Ooh.
And I thought, that can't be up to code. Turns out it is doing that. I don't know if it's up to code, but that is exactly what's going on. So to paint the picture, I think as I explained last week, the condensate line sort of, it comes out of the unit. There's an access point, you know, in the PVC that I can access, and then it goes down. And then there's actually another PVC pipe that comes down from the drainage of our humidifier that we run in the winter, the whole house humidifier. And that is where the water was coming out of and dripping down the PVC and getting out of the floor. And so, but the clog was somewhere that, and then it kind of circles around It banks around the side and then it just goes straight down into the slab. And so I was like, I don't know where this thing drains. My guess was that it kind of went in the direction of my backyard and was somehow buried under mulch. Turns out not to be the case. And he confirmed this because once he flushed it and cleaned it out, he could see, he like poured 5 gallons of water down at the access point to, you know, to make sure it was all going through. And he could go from where the HVAC system is into the laundry room, which is on kind of the other side of the basement, which is where our hot water heater is, which is where our floor drain is.
Mm.
And he could see and hear the water going from in the floor drain. He could like see it flowing. And then that went directly to our stack. Hmm. So that's the answer. He says it's very unusual, but that seems to be what's going on. His suggestion was to essentially use bleach. I think you could also use vinegar, but his suggestion was bleach, and is what he did, twice a year, and just pour it down there, pour some hot water down there, and that will clear it. You know, do it at the beginning of the hot season before you turn on the AC, and then at the end of the hot season, you know, in a couple of weeks when we turn off the AC. So, not very exciting. Cost me too much money for him to tell me that.
That's actually really interesting. And now it is calling to my, so when I got my basement remodeled in Virginia before we left Virginia.
Sure.
And when the guy who was doing when the plumber was out there installing new lines because we were putting a shower down there.
Yep.
He found a pipe that was connected to nothing and ran out of the house. And he was like, "What is this?" I was like, "I don't know. Don't mess with it." But I bet it was exactly that. I bet it was totally exactly that. It was connected to the...
Where was your HVAC unit, Sonny, in that
house?
Well,
the HVAC unit... I mean, the HVAC unit was... I mean, it was in the basement. Okay. Down, like... So, you know, it was in the... I don't know exactly how far that was. Probably 50 feet, something like that.
Yeah. So it probably ran the PVC all the way out there and just stuck it out of the house. And then it... Because I remember you have like a... You had like a hill.
Yeah.
From the backyard, so they would just pour out there. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's what they should do.
Mike, if you had known that this was the setup, could you have fixed it on your own? Or would you still have needed to call in the professionals?
I was this close to doing exactly what he did, except what he did, which I don't think I could have done, was he used nitrogen to blow it out. So I was using my shop vac.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really do think I needed a professional. But now I don't think I do to do the regular cleaning, you know? Of course, he pointed out all of these additional things. He's like, "Oh, you're going to want to consider getting your fan cleaned and the outdoor unit chemically cleaned. And that's going to cost, you know, probably around $800. But it's going to keep your condenser alive for longer. Oh, and by the way, this unit is from 2002 and the refrigerant that it uses, they don't make anymore. So it's running really well. But if your refrigerant ever leaks out of it, or if there's some kind of mechanical failure, you're going to have to replace the whole thing. So that's great. But it's a 21-year-old system. So, what do you think of that, JVL?
I just think that this house talk, this old house version of the Sub-Beacon is really, I don't know what the people think of it.
It has people pining for the days of Vic. I think that's what people are.
More mulch talk.
But other than that, no, things are fine. I think we should just move on to talking about the movie of the week, which is Quick Box Office Talk, the number one movie of the past week.
Not of the past
kinda.
3 days.
Kinda.
Of the past 5 days.
Sorry.
No.
Right, Sonny?
No.
Gran Turismo.
Yeah.
Right? Should we talk about Gran Turismo?
So Gran Turismo
is number one.
Gran Turismo is number one at the box office on the Box Office Mojo charts, because what has happened with this movie is, remember, you folks may remember that they pushed Gran Turismo back a couple weeks, and that partly that was strike related. But the other thing they were doing is running a bunch of promo screenings. They were running promo screenings, like basically paid previews that people could go to for a couple weeks. And they rolled all that money into Friday.
What?
They rolled all that money into Friday and then counted
it's
that.
Like 5 weeks worth of these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, so they rolled an extra three or four. It's hard to say exactly how much. My understanding is it's between $3 and $5 million into that, which then allowed them to say they were the number one movie at the box office. And the people at Warner Brothers were furious about this. The people at Warner Brothers were like, Barbie should be number one again. Nobody should be putting up with this. And it was very interesting to see which of the various trade outlets reported on this which way. So like Deadline kind of explained it and said, you know, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, still put Gran Turismo at number one. Sean McNulty at The Ankler. I read his morning newsletter, his morning roundup newsletter every day because it's great. But he put Gran Turismo at number two. After Barbie, because he did not count those preview screenings. So it was kind of interesting to see how that all worked out. I mean, look, we have gotten to a point where we describe the weekend grosses and include like an entire day's worth of Thursday screenings, and it's vaguely ridiculous. I find this to be much more absurd than like the constant calls for, oh, well, you got to take inflation into account. Like, okay, yeah, kind of. But like this is adding a whole extra day is cheating, and everybody does it. So like it's kind of normalized cheating. But
this is also kind of pathetic because this is a number one week for Gran Turismo at $17 million.
We're in the doldrums of summer. I mean, this is what happens every year. It was also a little bit weird because Sunday was National Cinema Day. I don't know if you guys took advantage of the $4 movie tickets all over the country.
Can't say I did.
See, I went on Sunday, but I used my A-list, and so I didn't realize that it was going to be a $4 ticket.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter because you have A-list, so it's free.
It does explain why my theater was packed.
Yeah. Yep.
And I saw this Sunday night, packed theater. The parking lot was packed. The lobby was hopping when I came in, and I thought, geez, I guess Gran Turismo has become a surprise hit.
No.
And then when on Monday, when I saw the $17 million gross, I thought, wait, this does not compute.
Yeah.
And then I learned about the Sunday price thing. Yep. I was like, oh, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you lower the prices, more people come out.
When you charge less for something, demand goes up. It's weird.
Bingo. Well, what they should have done, they need to get that big poster that has the Owen Gleiberman review in front of as many people as possible.
Well, they should put that on the side of the AMC.
The side of the building.
They should put the 50-foot-tall Owen Gleiberman review of Gran Turismo on the side of Sony needs to buy that
50 words per line.
And then one of those like telescopes they use at like, you know, Mountain, you know, like, get a little extra money, put a quarter
put
in.
Put the quarter in so you can read the Owen Gleiberman.
Exactly. Yeah. I saw it at my Alamo, by the way, and I actually stopped and read it for an extended period of time.
Did you read the whole review?
Did it hurt your eyes with that many words per line?
I literally stood there and read it for like about halfway down, and then I realized, A, this was ridiculous, even though I was kind of doing it like as to say that I did it. And then I was like, I'm actually tired of reading this. Like, I cannot stand to stand here and read this review anymore. So,
that's so funny.
So it's so okay. So anything else? Any other box office thoughts before we get into the movie itself? All right, Sonny, Gran Turismo. Let's hear a big boy review.
So the thing that's important to understand about Gran Turismo before we start any of this is that it's not a video game movie, despite being named after a video game, despite being produced by Sony.
It's a brand movie.
Nah, kind of. Despite being produced by Sony, despite being, you know, again, it's like there's a lot of things that suggest to you that this should be a video game movie. Not a video game movie. It's a sports movie. This is a sports movie from start to finish, just beat to beat, 100% a sports movie. It's about an outsider underdog who is trained by a disbelieving manager who overcomes all of his obstacles. Then has a setback, then has a triumphant victory at the end, where the triumphant victory is a third place finish. We could talk about that in a second. But it's a sports movie. This is a very beat by beat generic sports movie. That's all that's happening here. Like JVL says, it is also kind of a brand movie. So it's very funny.
It's Air.
Orlando Bloom plays an executive at Nissan. Very funny to hear the correct pronunciation of Nissan. Nobody ever once acknowledges that it's Nissan. We all call it Nissan. That's what
everybody calls it in America. I just assume this means
that
in Europe.
In America, we call it Nissan. I don't care what the Japanese
call it. I call it Datsun.
Datsun. No, but Nissan calls itself Nissan here.
Nissan. It's Nissan sales to remember or whatever. What's the Nissan tagline at the holidays? Nissan.
I can't remember because there's the December to remember, but I don't think that's Nissan.
No, I don't think that's Lexus.
Give your wife the Altima of her dreams.
All right.
I'll offer this while you're reviewing.
All right. So anyway, Orlando Bloom plays an executive at Nissan who convinces his skeptical Japanese board that what they need to do is team up with Gran Turismo to do a competition where kids who play the video game can join the Nissan sports team. They can become racers for real life instead of just on the computer. And it really is the movie dances very carefully around making any of the Nissan people look villainous. The closest we come is that moment where there's a moment where the kid who wins the ultimate race to become the racing team champion, Jan, he edges out the other kid who's more TV ready. You know, he's better at giving interviews and stuff. And Orlando Bloom's like, maybe we let this other kid win. And David Harbour's like, no. And then it just goes on from there. David Harbour plays the vet who does not believe these kids have what it takes and is going to make them run till they throw up, and he's going to...
J.K. Simmons character from Whiplash?
Yeah, kind of. Well, but I say more like...
But with a heart of gold.
Yeah, like Denzel Washington from, Remember the
Training Day.
Or, yes.
The Equalizer.
No, you know what he is? He's... he's...
I don't know where you're going to go with this. You started laughing.
Dodgeball.
He's Rip Torn's
character from Dodgeball.
Exactly. No, that's basically
you can
it.
Dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
So anyway, again, I like the comp points here are not the Super Mario Brothers movie or Street Fighter, right? The comp point is Rudy or Hoosiers or Remember
Blades
the Titans
of Glory.
Or Blades. Sure. Well, you described this as a parody of sports parodies.
So this is, if I could just say, this is like watching any musical biopic after watching Walk Hard, because it is so on. When you say formulaic, Sonny, I think you're underselling how unbelievably mind-numbingly formulaic this is, because it is, if you set out to write a parody of these types of movies, you couldn't be more on point than this.
Yeah. But it's very earnest.
Killed somebody.
Did it?
Oh, all right, now I'm over it.
So here's my question for you guys. Did it kill with your audiences? Because with my audience, they were clapping and cheering. They were into it. They were like totally into it. And it got an A from CinemaScore, which I was a little surprised by. I thought it might, be a B+ sort of movie. But it absolutely slayed with my audience. They loved it.
Not with me. This was I saw it on IMAX, so a very large auditorium, mostly full. And this is the first time I can really remember when I saw a whole lot of people on their phones throughout the course of the movie.
Whoa.
And my own feelings about this are such that people being on their phones didn't even bother me.
Wow.
I was just like, kind of like, yeah, no, I get it. I'd be texting somebody too.
Wow. Okay. By the way, I don't mean to go on a little diversion here, but since somebody brought it up and I said I would effort it, Nissan does not have a Christmas theme.
A November to Remember?
No. So there's Happy Honda Days. There's Toyota Thon.
Toyota Thon!
There's Lexus December to Remember. There's Mercedes Winter Event and Chevy Red Tag Sales Event. But there is no, I think this is the reason why Nissan is struggling in that sort of mid-tier Japanese import market, is because they don't have a Christmas sales tagline. Anyway. Just wanted to go there. So, JVL, so you were not a fan of this. I would say that my audience, which consisted of three other people, were not into it. I kind of was, though. Like, I found myself getting swept up in the thing.
Give us the bull case for it.
Gran Turismo fever. Mike's got it.
Well, okay, so the beginning of the movie, I couldn't believe how cheesy it was. Like how, as you say, JVL, like on the nose, like hitting all the beats of that, you know, underdog, you know, sports movie type of thing. And the movie actually,
the father who doesn't believe in him,
right?
Like all comes around like Zoolander's dad does in the, I mean, come
yeah,
fuck on.
Yeah. You know, the brother, you know, who has the, you know, who's
the real athlete,
he's good at sports.
The real athlete, you know, the favorite of the two.
Bart gets to sit up front cause he's good at sports.
Exactly. And I just thought it was all so cheesy. And then it wasn't even when they get to the Gran Turismo Academy. It was when the moment when David Harbour stops being an asshole and starts like seeing, you know, the potential in our hero, that I kind of was like, you know what? I'm just going to let it wash all over me, because
is it after he sees the brakes really were glazed.
Yes.
And
at that moment,
really, you know,
he knows what he's doing.
He knew what he was.
The video game has taught him skills that David Harbour could only imagine.
That's right.
Years of practice.
That's right.
So was that where you bought in, or was it when he was being boxed in on the track and he did the Tom Cruise from Top Gun throwing out the wings so that he stops, the other two cars slide together, and he just puts on the afterburners and zooms past them.
You know,
JVL, put on the brakes, goose, and they're going to fly right by.
JVL, those are instincts. You can't teach that. You can't teach instincts. No. So like, it was stupid. It was ridiculous, but I also just, I loved it. And maybe it was the caliber of acting. Like, I thought David Harbour was terrific. I thought Jimon Hounsou as the dad,
yep,
like did way better than he needed to for this role. Like the end where it was, again, ridiculous, but I totally bought in at this point. Like the end where he's like crying and he's like, you know, so proud of his son. I thought Jimon Hounsou totally sold it. I actually liked the kid who played the kid. Like, I thought he was a compelling actor. So by the end, I was not.
How about Ginger Spice? The Ginger Spice, really? Did she sell the mom for you?
Was that Jerry Ginger Howell. Spice?
Yep. Ginger Spice is now a middle-aged woman. Sorry.
What?
Thanks for playing.
What?
Yeah.
I am shocked. I am speechless.
Because she was so good? Is that why you're speechless?
I'll just say there were very few scenes with her in it for a reason.
How about Kappa? Nicholas Kappa. You thought that kid played D-bag so well that it couldn't possibly be an act?
I thought he was good, but you know who was
great?
Nicholas Kappa.
You know who was great is Thomas Kretschmann, who has one scene as the head of Kappa. He's like the German guy at the, and he has the perfect Thomas Kretschmann sneer. It's like the role he was born to parachute into a movie for like 30 seconds. Every movie that has like a sneering German in it should have Thomas Kretschmann just for one scene.
Well, I don't know. I thought the actual car action was great.
Did either of you?
I enjoyed it.
Were either of you familiar with this story?
No.
Zero.
Because my level of familiarity was literally zero.
Yeah,
so you can tell me that this is based on a true story. Not only have I never heard of it, I couldn't even begin to guess how closely any of this adheres to it. So, none of this was on my radar at all.
I'm going to let the scales are going to fall from your eyes, JVL, because I did do some research here. So, you know, the big crash.
Yes.
Where he
kills somebody,
a spectator,
yeah,
through no fault of his own.
Sure.
Through no fault of his own.
Yeah.
No, he was driving, but there was no fault of his own. Apparently happened like 2 years later in real life. So like they frame the movie around this as a low moment, right? As a moment where he's got to kind of climb back out from the depths in which his, you know, spirit has sunk. And apparently it happened like 2 years later after he had done the 24-hour at Le Mans. And
did they win Le Mans with three sim drivers?
So the other thing is, he was not even the first sim driver to go through the GT Academy. Really? There was a, yes. So he was not, it was not, the, his class was not the first class, the GT Academy. There was another, there, I think there were at least two or three classes before him, including another sim driver who had a similar arc in terms of getting in, became a professional racer from Spain. And it was that driver who was one of the three who did the Le Mans race that, that Jan, the main character, drove in. So it was not like the two other guys from his class who, you know, they all got
together. Did the main character Jan actually drive in a Le Mans race in which they won? In which,
no, they did not win. If you notice, by the way,
well,
in the
yeah,
movie,
yeah. They don't say he won in the movie.
They don't say he won.
He third.
He came on the, he went on the, that's why the champions for the podium, not the
champions. Passing Kappa, like at the
for,
very
for
third place.
But the no. This is you have to be paying very close attention, because remember, yes, the whole point is he just needs to get on the podium. So that means for them, third is coming and winning. You know the meme that's the guy spraying champagne yes, and like biting the metal, and then you zoom out and he's in third place
on the podium.
That's
with
literally
the other two,
this movie yes, is literally yes, that meme. It yes, is it is 100%. That meme. And it's very funny because, I mean, look, again, like third place at 24 Hours of Le Mans, that's a big deal, especially if you're, you know, a fake driver who becomes a real driver. Like, I don't mind that, but it was very funny because you definitely had to be paying a lot of attention yes, just to make sure, well, that you had that.
They end the scene with a wide shot of the podium. And
he's off
that's
to
where
the side,
I guess he's
confirmed
on the,
they're
the
off to the side,
right,
and it was
right,
it was like
stage,
it was like
because
they're in the white uniforms, yeah, and I was like, wait a second,
shouldn't they be in the middle first, if they yeah, won?
No. He's, remember, again, champagne is for the podium.
Again, it's literally that meme brought to life. It's literally the third totally, place guy meme.
Totally. So I don't know. It was an odd thing. The other thing I kind of liked what they did was the way they on screen kind of pulled you into the game aspect of it, right? Where he's sort of imagining, you know, either the tracks, yeah,
visualizing the line, right?
Visualizing
yeah, so
the line,
showing the line.
I thought that was neat.
I like that. I like holding the little chirons above the cars to help.
That was people, useful. Yeah,
yeah. There were okay things in it. I didn't like it, and I didn't like it in a bad way. I didn't like it in a. I was disinterested by it.
Okay,
and. Ultimately, I mean, it's not entirely fair to criticize it for not being the movie that I think it should have been, but I'll do it anyway.
Go ahead.
I mean, there is a very, very interesting thing here, which is about the internet and the way, I mean, I thought about online poker watching this, right?
Sure.
And how online poker has revolutionized the world of professional poker player. And is Scott Moneymaker, was he the one? Chris Moneymaker was the first online player to win the World Series of Poker, right? It was like a really big deal. And it changed how everybody plays poker and like changed the whole scene. And I guess that there is a story, which I never realized to be told, about how simulation racing has changed the world of whatever this kind of racing is. I don't even know what it's called. This isn't F1. And it's not NASCAR, but maybe it has democratized it. Maybe it has changed how they all approach racing itself. Maybe it has changed how they practice. I don't know. But this movie has nothing to say about any of that shit, right? It's just a pure hero's journey. It has absolutely nothing to say about the broader. And the hero's journey is framed as the existing racers are bad and this guy is good.
Yeah.
For some
you
reason.
You wanted like a money ball.
I mean, I'm just saying that would have been one way to make this an interesting movie, mm-hmm, and they chose not to make that, and that's fine. But I don't even think it succeeds as a racing movie, because I don't know about you, Michael, but I found the actual racing scenes boring as shit. And it's because this presents the act of racing as really good drivers. When they press their foot down on the gas, their cars go faster than all the other cars. That's literally how everything goes. Every pass is just, well, he presses his foot down, and so his car goes faster. Like, this is not, wow, again, Matt Robarts can correct me, But my understanding that that is not how racing works.
Well, they show the lines. Like, it's the lines of, you know.
They show that a little bit, but there's a lot of just like, you know, I'm going to press gas, go fast. And that's not, I mean, a lot, they hint to this only once, and it's right before the crash, which is the idea of like, hey, you're on a straightaway, so you got to build as much speed as possible and then begin your deceleration at a certain point, right? This is. And that is a lot of what this is about, right? It's about managing the velocity of your car and understanding where on the track you can go at what speed, right? That's what this is about. It's about managing velocity, which, by the way, is a lot of what dogfighting is in airplanes. This is, you know, people talk about this all the time. And this movie has none of that. It just, it flattens the entire act of racing as to, well, you know, he's a good racer, so his car goes faster. Like, come the fuck on, man. And the other thing is the glorification of the driver in this and the flattening of everything else on the team as to being absolutely meaningless runs so counter to, like, the ethos of Ford versus Ferrari. I don't know. Like, I just... This is the second best movie about Le Mans that I've seen in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Ford versus Ferrari, much better, obviously.
Totally. Like, absolutely.
But also, I mean, because again, like, you're just taking the drivers are everything. Like, you know, the drivers on, and that's simply, again, Matt Robarts knows a lot about this stuff. Matt, you can text me and correct me on this. My understanding is that is not how these things work. Like, the teams are, you know, really a team. The engineer has a lot to do with it. The cars matter a very great deal.
Yeah.
You know, and the drivers help you at the margins.
Margins. So the reason I thought it worked as a racing movie was because I thought it was actually pretty well shot for a racing movie. The combination of the on the track stuff and helicopter shots and also drone work kept it.
How much of that was practical? Because a lot of that felt super weightless and CGI to me.
Well, the stuff that probably felt weightless and CGI'd was the drone stuff. The stuff that comes like out of the stands down, like over and then like reverses on a dime and comes like that's all drone stuff. It's really, again, between this and Ambulance and The Gray Man, we are actually at a very kind of interesting inflection point in how drones are being used. I don't think anybody has quite cracked the language. I don't think there's a standard of how the language of cinema should use this precisely, but there interesting things are happening. I feel like this is like, it's not like with Steadicam where like The Shining comes out and Steadicam is like, oh, this is how Steadicam should work, right?
Nobody knows how drone.
Nobody quite understands how to make this work on.
Chris McQuarrie does. That the motorcycle jump in Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning is only possible because of drones.
Yeah.
But you know what they did was they had like a gazillion cameras.
Yeah.
And it was all there, you know, they sort of
flooded
the zone
with
cameras.
He also did that in a way to kind of mimic how standard camera work looks.
Yes.
Like they were trying to go for a very standard, like if you were shooting this with a helicopter, how would it look? Right. Or a crane. Like the three movies I just mentioned, again, Ambulance, The Gray Man, and Gran Turismo, they're doing something different. It's like a different look and feel of film, which I find kind of interesting to think about what the implications of all that are and how it's gonna what things will look like 10 years from now.
But what was this stuff done practically?
I think a lot
were they actually
I mean I think a lot of it was
around?
they were certainly okay. Racing.
The crowds and stadiums felt fake.
Well, the crowds probably were CGI painted in. I mean, you don't hire a million extras for stuff like this. It's, you know, that's too
I'm just saying it looked really bad. I thought the movie didn't look great, and I thought the racing scenes were weightless and not filled with much tension or drama. Because again, the answer in every case is, how is he going to pass that guy? Oh, well, he'll just make his car go faster.
Like that's just how I don't know. I thought they did a good job of sort of demonstrating how it was up to a sort of a feel, right? A touch and an ability to see opportunities.
He's Ray. Jan is a Mary Sue. Right?
I guess so. Yes, I guess. But I think you are, as you noted, JVL, you're wanting a different movie. You're wanting the mechanics of.
Yeah, I would have preferred a different movie.
Yeah, and I can understand that.
But I just say even this movie as it is, it's not bad, but it left me very, very cold and not in a new, like cold, not cold neutral or cold positive, but like cold negative, if that makes sense.
No,
right?
Totally.
So not, I hated it, not I didn't like it, but just like, no.
Totally. I mean, this, for me, this is an almost definitional 2.5 star movie, like 2.5 out of 4 stars. Like it's, it could tip good or bad depending on how I feel when I see it. But it's competent and it's better than it needs to be in a lot of different ways. I will say, coming out of the movie, I was very tempted to go thumbs down on my Rotten Tomatoes score, because did you guys catch the song that they used at the end of the movie that played over like the whole triumphant part?
What no. was that? I recognize it from another movie.
Oh, you know what it was? It was the closing.
Tell me. I meant to look it up.
The closing track from Heat.
Yes, thank you.
It's the Moby song, God's Moving Over the Face of the Water, or whatever, moving across the face of the water.
I meant to look that up as I was leaving.
And I'm like sitting here listening to it. I'm like, this is stolen score valor. They can't do this. You can't do this in a movie.
We're
going to
make
That's
you like
allowed.
Our theater movie as you leave the theater by playing a song you remember from a better movie.
Yeah, it was funny. And it's funny because I was watching The Equalizer last night, the first Equalizer, to get ready for The Equalizer 3, which is coming out on Friday. And at the end of that movie, they play a track from Heat as well, but it's a different Moby track and they play a different part of the song. So like, you know, it's the moment in Heat when Vincent Hanna's in the helicopter and he's like do, 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 like part. Yeah. Except they play in The Equalizer, they play that part a little bit, but then they play like the actual lyrics that Moby says. So I was like, okay, that's not as bad. It's still kind of bad. You shouldn't stop stealing from Heat movies, other movies. We've all seen that movie a million times. We know what you're doing. You have to stop stealing from Heat.
So no movie can use Layla anymore, for instance?
No, absolutely not. You cannot use the instrumental from Layla to do anything in your movies anymore, because Martin Scorsese has done that perfectly. You will never top the deceased body montage from Goodfellas.
It's the coda, actually. It's not the instrumental version. It's the coda of Layla.
It's the instrumental part of the end at the end of the song. It's all
so, Sonny, you kind of liked it. You were so. What were you? Where did
I
you?
I mean,
you
again,
were sort of
I was
half stars,
positive?
Right?
Mixed positive. I thought it was perfectly fine. The acting was all better than it needed to be.
Yes.
And that is what tipped me over. David Harbour's very good in this, and it's funny.
He is very
again,
good.
He's speaking good in everything.
Speaking of that the Equalizer, awesome. Speaking of The Equalizer, David Harbour is in that movie as a Irish cop who's on the payroll of the Russians. And it's very interesting to look at his career, because there was a moment right before Stranger Things popped and was huge where he pops up in a lot of little things like this. He was also in Suicide Squad. He was like a goon in Suicide Squad. And it's just like he has gotten better in the last 10 years, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, he is a much better actor now than he was at that point in his career. Well, and I don't know what flipped the switch.
Do wonder if a success like Stranger Things like buoys you as an actor, you kind of feel like, oh, like I've got my groove back, and you're back on top of your game.
I have the answer to this.
Steroids?
Certain actors are born to be perfect in a certain age range, and they're no good too early.
Yeah.
Right. Or like the truth is
less good.
24-year-old George Clooney, the world has no use for 24-year-old George Clooney. We needed George Clooney starting at like age 35, and even that was a little young.
40.
Right? George Clooney,
40 to 60.
George Clooney, 40 to like 55, that's his bread and butter. Yeah.
Right.
I think David Harbour needs to be middle-aged in order to really be where he's meant to be as an actor.
So, since we're speaking about actors in this movie, I was not prepared for doughy old Orlando Bloom.
Boy, he looks like Jason Bateman almost. Slightly more Jack Jason Bateman. In middle-aged Orlando Bloom is a little sad.
His career is...
He looks great. He looks great.
His career is
sad for us, not for him. Sad for us.
His career is very interesting to me, because he was also in the
Caribbean.
Movie. He was in Pirates of the Caribbean. He was in Lord of the Rings. But he was also in the movie that was based on the Jake Tapper book. About the guys in Afghanistan, the Outpost. He was in the Outpost, and he is playing a Marine in that, and like looked pretty. It was is like in pretty good shape. He's like kind of jacked and like and looked good in that. In a way, yeah, you guys are right. I when I saw him in this, I was like, ooh, Orlando Bloom.
He looks good. Looks middle-aged.
That's the problem. He's been doing this for 25 years now, right? Yeah. The Lord of the Rings movie starts shooting in 1998 or whatever. Like,
right.
You know, it's 2023 now.
And he's a total unknown adventure sports guy. Like, he's not even an actor when they shoot Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Correct.
Just like a bungee jumper and motocross jumper. Yeah. Yeah, but now he looks like somebody who has like a bunch of kids. Yeah.
Right.
Now he looks like somebody who drives a Chrysler Pacifica like the rest of us. And it's
or a Nissan Altima.
Nissan.
Altima.
What was the Nissan minivan that they killed? The Quest?
The Quest.
Nissan Quest.
Yep. Yeah, that was a Nissan Quest. It was sort of jarring. I was like, "Oh, you know, I mean, I think back to like that post Lord of the Rings where he was like popping up in a ton of movies and he was like playing like a young person. And then just like, he kind of fell off the map for me. He wasn't in it. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a second. You're a dad. Any other thoughts on Gran Turismo? Did you guys ever play Gran Turismo on PlayStation?
I had friends who were very, very into it, like obsessively, you know, building their cars and stuff. I played it for a little bit. It was not fun for me because it is a racing simulator. It's not a
correct.
Like if I'm playing a racing game, I want to play Mario Kart or something.
Right.
Like
even Cruising USA was like, you know, it is time kind of fun. Yeah.
This is the difference between, I don't know if you guys are probably, you're both too young to remember this, but there was early days of PC gaming, there were a lot of flight simulator type games.
Oh, I remember those, yeah.
And the fun ones were like, you're in the F-15 Eagle and you're like shooting down a bunch of MiGs. And that was super fun because it wasn't a real simulator. The real simulators were like, you're trying to fly a Boeing 737 from Los Angeles to Tokyo. Yeah. You're just like sitting in front of your computer for 12 hours, like doing nothing. Like that's the simulation.
No,
I need more. I don't want reality.
You're trying to land on an aircraft carrier. Like,
right. Good luck.
I have a memory of a friend of mine in the neighborhood. Like her dad had one of those flight simulators on the PC and it was like the only video game they had in her house, you know, so like go over to play at her house. And it was like, yeah, my dad said you can play this. And like, sitting up there at like 7 years old and being like, this is a game.
Boring. Give me X-Wing.
Let's go outside.
Somebody wrote a really good essay about this, about how like video games made a turn where they started out really trying to get as close to real life as possible and then realized that real life is boring. And so they turned away from it.
The example
of this was, there was a game which attempted to be like a samurai sword fighting simulator. And the problem with it is like anytime you got cut at all in any way, you died. And so like the samurai sword simulator, every match took like 4 seconds. And it was just like whoever you lunge left. And if the person lunges left also, and you're like a half second earlier, congrats, you win. It's just boring. Nobody wants that.
Right. Nobody wants.
Right.
We want Samurai Shodown.
Yeah,
exactly.
We want Soul Calibur.
We want, right? Street Fighter.
Street Fighter.
All right. Well, if those are all the thoughts, see, we did turn this into a video game movie. Look at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Try to stop us.
Give me Ridge Racer. Give me the Ridge Racer movie.
Sports movie.
The
not
pole
a video
position
game.
Movie.
All right. That's all the time we're going to give to this episode. Check us out at subbeacon.com. Episodes every Friday there. We'll see you next time.
Boy, I hadn't even really thought of this, but if we were going to rank racing games,
oof.
Ooh, I don't know how I'd do that. But I'll tell you the two things that I would put at the top, which are not real. Ivan Stewart's Off-Road, which is a stand-up console where you're sort of 3D God's eye view. There are three trucks and you're racing trucks around a dirt path and you just got to beat the gray Ivan Stewart. I'm the fucking master of that game. I could play that game for 3 hours on a single quarter.
I don't even know what that game is. I don't have any idea what that is, what you're talking about.
It's amazing. But also, I love Crazy Taxi. But I'm not sure
that
Crazy Taxi is a racing game exactly. But that's sort of... I loved that stuff. So what did you guys like?
I feel like when we got a PlayStation, a PlayStation 1.
Ridge Racer.
No, Rallycross 2. What I was going to say is I feel like PlayStation was sort of, I don't know if they pushed it or what, but like that's where I feel like racing games really kind of went to the next level.
100%.
Was with the PlayStation, and I'm not quite sure why, but Rallycross 2 was what we had. And you're essentially just driving rally cars around on dirt tracks and doing, you know, badass, like, you know, ramp flips and stuff like that. And it was a great game. We play that constantly at my house. Mm. 1998 or whatever.
Sonny. So there are two ways to think about this. There's home console and arcade, right? So like home console, the only racing game that I have played regularly are the various Mario Karts. So Super Mario Kart was probably my number one seed here. I really like the Switch.
Yeah,
Mario Kart a lot.
Mario Kart 8.
Mario Kart 8 is very, very good. That's a lot of fun. I was less into Mario Kart 64. I never really liked. I had a Nintendo 64, and I did not care for it. It was not a system for me. I actually stopped playing video games for like 10 years after getting a Nintendo 64. It's like, I guess I've aged out of this.
What did N64 do to you?
I don't know.
It was a weird ass controller.
Yeah,
it's like the shocker versus shocker.
It was a weird controller, but I also just didn't like the aesthetics of the games. I didn't like the blocky 3D.
It was too blocky.
So I stopped playing anyway. But then there's arcades, and in the arcades, the racing game I have always preferred is Cruisin' USA.
Oh yeah,
which
love it.
I prefer
Cruisin' World.
Cruisin' World.
Cruisin' World. Either way,
Cruisin' World is better. Same engine. They made a Fast and Furious game using that engine where you could like drive around in Vin Diesel's car.
I've played that with my kids, and that's also kind of fun.
Good time. Daytona. Do you remember? Do you go to the Dayton Busters? And they would have like 8 Daytona cars, so you could be everybody there racing against each other. Daytona!
Right. Yeah. Did Cruising USA have the lap girls in bikinis? Or am I just making that up?
I think both that and Daytona at the starting line. Yeah, at the starting.
And if you double tapped the gas, you would get a turbo boost and you'd
go on wheelie.
The wheelie. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Sure, it's fine.